because their taxes are being increased, property taxes, added value taxes. But at the same time, they see that the political parties are more concerned about their lifestyle and also are more afraid to their party bosses rather than to be accountable to their respective constituencies. That is what makes people angry. Last but not the least, these motorcycle taxi drivers that symbolize the difficulties that many Indonesians have faced, lost their job or need to supplement their income by working part-time or sometimes full-time, by doing motorcycle work or to a lesser degree also driving cars. And there are so many motorcycle taxi drivers all over Indonesia. They are so angry with the death of their colleague in Jakarta.
Andreas Harsono, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Indonesia researcher at Human Rights Watch. We'll link to your new report, Indonesia End Crackdown on Protesters, Arbitrary Detention, Investigate Excessive Use of Force, Tear Gas Against Demonstrators. Andreas was joining us from Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Perkin, Nate Feldstein, Gusdar Masiarods, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera. I'm Mimi Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's Loud and Proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. That's kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, two more Oregon representatives weigh in on the Congressional Block the Bombs Act.
Multnomah County bans the concealed carry of guns in county buildings.
And Oregonians join a worldwide effort to break the siege in Gaza by boat.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 5th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Sam Bowman. On Thursday, state and local elected leaders in Oregon held a press conference outside Portland City Hall to call on the state's congressional representatives to sponsor the Block the Bombs Act, H.R. 3565. If passed, the bill would stop the U.S. from sending certain offensive weapons to Israel. This includes bunker-busting bombs, joint direct attack munition assemblies, and 155-millimeter ammunition. These weapons are described by the lawmakers as the deadliest weapons used by Israel against Palestinians in Gaza. Two Oregon representatives, Val Hoyle and Suzanne Bonamici, have recently become sponsors of the bill. Representative Maxine Dexter from Oregon's 3rd District said in a statement that she would support the Block the Bombs Act if it comes up for a vote, but didn't say she would co-sponsor it. She added, quote, "This bill is one of many different ways to address this disastrous human rights catastrophe. I strongly encourage advocates not to come too early closure that this bill is sufficient. I believe we need to instead be pressing for immediate administrative and diplomatic action to end the horror." End quote. Representative Andrea Salinas from Oregon's 6th District indicated in a statement that she would consider supporting the Block the Bombs Act. She said, quote, "The Israeli government has not displayed a good faith effort to stop the bloodshed and death of thousands of innocent Palestinians, including women and children, at food distribution sites and in Gaza. The U.S. must consider withholding offensive weapons to the Israeli government, and I will work with my colleagues to find the appropriate leverage to get the innocent Palestinians the needed humanitarian aid," end quote. Oregon Representatives Janelle Bynum and Cliff Bentz could not be reached for comment by KABU.
Multnomah County will ban concealed carry guns in county public buildings. Multnomah County commissioners brought forward the proposal Thursday, voting unanimously to approve it. Oregon Senate Bill 243, passed in June, allows local governments and transit agencies to ban all guns in the buildings where they meet. Oregon is an open carry state, but by law, people cannot bring a gun or other dangerous weapon into a public building. Commissioner Shannon Singleton said in the meeting, quote, "We know that our buildings serve vulnerable populations, and the presence of firearms in public buildings, even when carried by individuals with a concealed handgun license, can contribute to a culture of fear," end quote. Similar bans are also in place at Portland Public Schools, the PDX Airport, and at local courthouses.
In late July, Portland State University announced a last-minute change to the in-person work policy that has resulted in many leaving their jobs. PSU announced, with only a 3-month heads-up, that all staff must begin working in-person in order to create a more, quote-unquote, vibrant campus by mid-November. The original order issued in June stated that all staff must return to campus for 4 days a week by September of 2026. Many employees expressed feeling taken off guard by the order. Portland Mercury spoke with one woman by the name of Janet Alvarado, who works in the Department of Research and Graduate Studies. Alvarado lives in Oak Ridge, about 150 miles away from campus. She would have to move in order to keep her job if an exception is not made for her. The economic vibrancy of downtown is, quote, "The economic vibrancy of downtown is being privileged over the health and well-being of your staff," Alvarado said. Quote, "The impact of this is blowing up our office," end quote. Another PSU employee that spoke to the Mercury said that he lives in Olympia and would not be able to sustainably afford to live in Portland with the salary that he makes from PSU. At least 3 employees from PSU have already quit due to the new in-person work order. PSU's chapter of the American Association of University Professors Union represents about 1,200 workers at PSU and has taken issue with the new order, as well as the adjunct faculty union, PSUFA.
Employees of Powell Books accuse the bookseller of using AI designs in new fall-themed t-shirts and tote bags. The items in question are available in-store. The local bookseller also recently took steps to lay off at least 18 employees since July of this year. Powell's blames the economy, saying its downtown location, known as Powell City of Books, has struggled since COVID, and sales have not returned to pre-pandemic levels. Many took to social media to sound the alarm about the bookseller's use of artificial intelligence. One individual claims to be an employee said the plans to use AI art for the company's new merchandise were contested by workers on multiple occasions. Powell's went ahead with the artificially created art in spite of the internal pushback. Arguments against the use of AI include the desire to remain committed to the city's rich creative culture and support of local artists and writers. These Portland creatives see dwindling opportunities since the increased use of low-cost AI art generators. New Prospects can be hard to come by. Now, those may be satisfied by free designs created by using artificial intelligence.
Portland is one of at least 11 cities to be left behind by Spirit Airlines. The airline filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy for the second time in less than a year. As part of the restructuring, Spirit will also end service in the cities of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Birmingham, Alabama, Oakland, California, Salt Lake City, Utah, and Boise, Idaho, among others. The ultra-low-cost airline does plan to keep flying as usual elsewhere, meaning passengers can still book trips and use their tickets, credits, and loyalty points. Employees will continue to get paid. The previous Chapter 11 petition focused on reducing debt and raising capital. Spirit is known for its bright yellow planes and no-frills service. It was majorly affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, losing more than $2.5 billion since the start of 2020. Budget carriers are under pressure by bigger airlines, which are offering their own low-cost tickets. Spirit has, in the meantime, tried to offer more upscale travel, with fancy perks attached to the more expensive tickets. Spirit Aviation Holdings, the carrier's parent company, recently revealed that it has, quote, substantial doubt about its ability to stay in business over the next year. It cited poor demand for domestic leisure travel and uncertainties in its business operations. Spirit has considered selling off planes and real estate. Previous buyout attempts from budget rivals like JetBlue and Frontier were unsuccessful before and during Spirit's first bankruptcy. Spirit operates over 5,000 flights to 88 destinations in the U.S., the Caribbean, Mexico, Central America, Panama, and Colombia.
Federal officials called it an astronomical drug bust back in February of 2024. They found 1.4 metric tons of liquid heroin in the back of a U-Haul in the suburban city of Tigard, equivalent to 50 million fatal doses. But it wasn't liquid heroin. It was mostly water. Crime lab testing found that what type of drug was in the liquid, heroin, but they did not account for the concentration. A defense attorney for one of the men accused of transporting the drugs did. He found that the drums were filled with 99.99% water and just 0.0001% of heroin. The heroin was so diluted, was unusable, and wouldn't have made even one fatal dose. The prosecutor's case relied on an unidentified source who claimed to have put 800 grams of heroin into the barrels. Two of the six men involved have been sentenced already, and two more have entered guilty pleas. The new evidence may help to reduce their sentences, even though the men apparently did not know the heroin concentration was so low. Oregon State Police told the Oregonian that the purity of tested drugs isn't required for prosecution under state law.
This Saturday, Northeast Portland will celebrate the opening of Albina Vision Trust's new development. Albina One will facilitate the return of displaced families back into the Albina neighborhood with affordable housing for the community. KBOO's Hannah Francis has more.
Tomorrow, Saturday, September 6th, Albina Vision Trust will celebrate the grand opening of its first housing development, Albina One. This is the first step in realizing Albina Vision Trust's ultimate goal of rerouting Black families in the heart of Portland's historically Black Albina neighborhood. The event will include a ribbon cutting and a block party. I have here with me Ahlam Osman, Albina Vision Trust's Communications Associate. So when and where will this celebration and block party be happening?
Yeah, so this will happen tomorrow, Saturday, September 6th. At Albina One in our courtyard, which is 1771 North Flint Avenue. Our event will run from 10 to 4 p.m. However, we'll have a formal program and ribbon cutting starting at 12 p.m.
Could you explain to me a little bit more of like how the Northeast preference policy works and like how much more affordable this will be?
100% of the units at Albina One are affordable. The standard for what's considered low income is typically at around 60% AMI, but Albina Vision Trust was able to kind of make it where it's at around 40% AMI. And on top of that, because of the support from Portland Clean Energy Fund, the building was designed to be very energy efficient. So Albina Vision Trust will be covering 100% of utility costs. So residents don't have to worry about, you know, paying for their electricity bill or their utility bills. We'll be able to cover that. So that's part of what makes Albina one very affordable.
Amazing. Thank you. What can folks expect from this event?
Yeah, so this will be a block party celebration. We'll have live music, food, art, vendors. Most of our vendors are Black-owned businesses or artists and, you know, community organizations. And this really is a commemoration of the first families moving into Albina One, and is a huge milestone in the larger vision to really reimagine Portland Central City as a place where working class families can live and play.
Amazing. What are your hopes for the development?
Want this to be a blueprint for development in not just in Oregon, but nationally, that development can be equitable and sustainable. We really want to make sure that the Albina neighborhood, because this is our first development, and, you know, our next development is going to be like the PPS property. So we really are just hoping to be able to bring more families into Albina One and to reroute displaced Portlanders into the neighborhood.
You were just listening to an interview with Alam Osman, the communications associate for Albina Vision Trust, and the opening of their first development, Albina One. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at KBOO anytime during this program or by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after the newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 64 degrees. Tomorrow, look for an overcast evening and day with a high of about 79. Today in history, in 1957, the Little Rock Nine were barred from entering Little Rock Central High School by a riot of white students and the Arkansas National Guard. They were the first students to desegregate schools in the state of Arkansas. 2 weeks later, President Eisenhower mobilized the 101st Airborne Division, ensuring the nine students' admittance to the school. The quote of the day is from filmmaker Federico Fellini, who said, quote, "I think television has betrayed the meaning of democratic speech, adding visual chaos to the confusion of voices. What role does silence have in all of this noise?"
The Gaza Health Ministry announced on September 3rd that over 64,000 people in Gaza have been killed by Israel in the nearly 2 years since October 7th, 2023. Dozens of people are killed every day in Gaza, either from starvation, bombs, or guns. The situations are becoming even deadlier as over 2 million people attempt to survive the bombing of their tents and the last standing buildings in the 141-square-mile Gaza Strip, of which only 14 square miles are unoccupied by Israeli soldiers, while access to food has become almost non-existent. In a worldwide response, citizens from all over the world have set sail in the organized Global Sumud Flotilla to break the siege on Gaza. Several people from Oregon have joined the fleets. Reporter Hannah Francis spoke with Jan Levin, the mother of Paul Reed, who joined the flotilla.
Could you tell me a little bit about the current status of your son, Paul Reed, who left from Barcelona just this week?
He's doing really good. He's pretty exhausted. They had a rough start to their journey, as I'm sure many people are aware. The ocean was really, really rough, and the waves were just coming over the bow of the boat. There were several boats, because they're smaller, which had to turn back, and they actually needed repair. Since then, the weather's been pretty good, and the seas have been relatively calm. They're all in good spirits, and they're all unified.
Can you tell me about the conditions that compelled Paul to join the flotilla?
Oh, he's been watching what's been going on in Gaza for many years. He actually lived in the Middle East for a while. He met a lot of refugees in Jordan. He's traveled extensively throughout the Middle East, and he has seen firsthand what's been going on. He's been to Gaza. He's been shot at by Israeli soldiers for filming peaceful demonstrations where there were no weapons, there were no hostilities, no hostile acts taken by any of the people that were involved in the demonstration. They were just simply asking for more food, which was years ago.
What is your son risking by going on this voyage?
He's risking his life. He and everybody else on this voyage are risking their lives. And he said, honestly, whatever he's going through is nothing compared to what the people of Gaza have been going through for many, many years.
Israel released a statement yesterday that they are regarding the people on the boats as Hamas sympathizers and terrorists and plan to intercept their boats. What do you have to say about this?
I would like to know why no one is investigating whether Israel is not a terrorist state. What they are doing is terrorism in the worst degree. These people on these boats are there peaceably, there for strictly for bringing humanitarian aid, food, water, medicine, diapers to the people of Gaza. How is that terrorism? They have no weapons. There's not one weapon on any of the boats. They are completely vulnerable, completely unprotected. How is that terrorism? That's a ridiculous statement for Israel to make. They come in peace. They're not there to do any harm. They're there to supply humanitarian aid.
What do you hope will happen from this?
What I hope is that Israel allows them to complete their mission, to go to Gaza, to unload all of their supplies, and then peacefully go home.
Thank you so much, Jan. Good luck to you and your family.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to an interview with Jan Levin, the mother of Paul Reed, who is currently sailing to break the siege on Gaza with the Global Sumud Flotilla. For KBOO News, I'm Hannah Francis.
Conservation groups warn against repealing forest protections. Vaccine policy sparks clashes in Congress. And the White House faces scrutiny over a naval strike near Venezuela. With those stories and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This seems like the process is being purposefully accelerated in a way to meet the administration's ends, and that's something we should all be very, very concerned about.
Matt Cannon with the Sierra Club in Maine warns against the Trump administration repealing the roadless rule. Nearly 60 million acres of forest could be open to logging, oil, and gas drilling if the Clinton-era wilderness protection policy is rolled back. The administration argues the change would boost timber production by a quarter, but opponents say it threatens drinking water and wildlife. Public comments close in 2 weeks. HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has canceled $500 million in vaccine contracts and is making this season's COVID shot harder to get. Calls for his resignation spilled into a Senate hearing. Republican Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy was a key vote in Kennedy's confirmation and a strong supporter of the COVID vaccine developed during President Donald Trump's first term. But Cassidy, an MD, says Kennedy is violating promises he made to get confirmation.
It surprises me that you think so highly of Operation Warp Speed when, as an attorney, you attempted to restrict access.
Florida has moved to eliminate school vaccine mandates altogether, while governors on the West Coast are building regional alliances to continue promoting shots. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey says her state won't be deterred.
We are taking a stand. We are a healthcare leader, and we're not going to let the Trump administration or Robert Kennedy cost lives and take us down.
Congressional leaders say they expect the White House to explain how an attack on a ship off the coast of Venezuela fits with presidential powers. The administration calls the strike that killed 11 part of an ongoing war against drug cartels. The White House says Trump will restore the Defense Department to its historic name, the Department of War. Secretary Pete Hegseth says the change reflects a warrior ethos. Congress would need to approve a permanent renaming. Trump is asking the Supreme Court to uphold his firing of Democratic Federal Trade Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter earlier this year. A lower court ruled the dismissal illegal, and Slaughter has returned to her post pending the appeal. The High Court has greatly strengthened the president's power to fire officials at independent bodies. Small farmers say federal crop insurance policies that safeguards major corn and soybean growers are leaving them exposed. Illinois farmer and insurance agent Ed Dubrick says without coverage, he has to balance his crops and hope that protects him from bad weather.
Because peas like cool weather, but tomatoes and peppers want warm weather, and peppers do really well in drought. So like having that diversity of, okay, well, it might be a bad year for this crop, but I know that one's going to pick up the slack if things turn this direction.
Dubrick says it's hard to find anyone willing to underwrite crop insurance for a small operation like his. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Earlier this year, the Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE, targeted two Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Minnesota and Wisconsin to be shut down. But the two offices remain open. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Wisconsin and Minnesota remain open after the Department of Government Efficiency targeted them for termination. As Danielle Kading reports, the initiative formerly led by billionaire Elon Musk had proposed canceling leases for several offices earlier this year.
The cancellations affected offices in Ashland and Shawnee in Wisconsin and Bemidji in Minnesota. Wisconsin tribes say the Bureau of Indian Affairs office in Ashland is a critical regional hub that processes land trust applications and provides education assistance and law enforcement support. Robert Blanchard is chair of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. He says closing the office would have been a hardship for the tribe.
We would have probably had to go maybe Minneapolis or some other place further away from us to get services.
Bill Broidrick represents the owner of the Ashland office. He says Wisconsin tribes adopted a resolution in opposition to its closure.
On that basis, the decision was made by the Bureau of Indian Affairs to keep the office open.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs says all three offices remain open. The agency says it's working to ensure adequate space continues to be available to support delivery of services to tribes. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
A site on Douglas Island could be the future home of a casino-like gambling hall due to a proposal from the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. The proposal was approved by the National Indian Gaming Commission. Tlingit and Haida says the facility's approval represents a step toward economic self-sufficiency and sovereignty for the tribe. KTOO's Clarice Larson has more.
The land is on Fish Creek Road, not far from Eaglecrest Ski Area on Douglas Island. It's just a small piece of a native allotment owned by tribal members who lease it to Tlingit and Haida. Tlingit and Haida spokesperson Dixie Hutchinson confirmed that the tribe is developing a gaming facility. The tribe intends to offer Class 2 gaming, which covers things like pull tabs, bingo, and slot-style electronic machines. The National Indian Gaming Commission's acting chair approved the tribe for site-specific gaming at the location in January. The decision came just days before President Donald Trump began his second term in office. For decades, federal officials and state officials in Alaska have said that Native allotments owned by tribal members in Alaska were not considered Indian country. Therefore, they are not under the jurisdiction of tribes and cannot be home to casinos or casino-like gaming halls under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. But Michelle Jockathot-Demert, a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Tribal Governance Department, says the legal interpretation of Native allotments shifted when President Joe Biden came into office.
During the Biden administration, there was a solicitor's opinion that evaluated the laws and made the determination that the laws supported that Indian tribes in Alaska have jurisdiction over allotments.
She says gaming serves as an important governmental function for many tribes in the U.S.
You know, people look at it that it's just this big money-making operation, but it's so much more than that. It's an opportunity to make money and an opportunity to put that right back into your governmental system to provide essential services to your citizens.
Hutchinson says the project is still in the early phases of development. She says the tribe intends to reinvest the gaming hall's revenue into essential tribal programs and services. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producers are Hannah Francis and Althea Billings, and our engineer is Hannah Francis. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The Director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm